Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, David Wiedekind and Chaz Cox from Invista. And today we're going to talk about keys to a successful freight audit and payment implementation. Now, freight audit and payment, in a previous Talking Logistics episode we did about a year ago, we talked about how it was still alive and kicking, right? And how that market continues to grow, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as kind of an introduction. But then the question becomes, once you've selected a freight audit and payment partner, I mean, how do you go about implementing that process? And, what are some lessons learned, some key advice to make sure that you achieve success with that implementation? So it's great to have both David and Chaz here, who have a wealth of experience in this area, working with a variety of customers, and can share their insights. And some lessons learned on implementing a successful freight audit and payment program. Just want to remind those of you that are joining us live today that, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So if you've got a question for David and Chaz as we're having our conversation here, you can do so via the submit a question button, and I'll keep an eye on it. And certainly if it's a good and appropriate question and we have time, I'll try to weave it into the conversation. And then finally, if you are joining us as a visitor, you will have to sign in first with Spreecast in order to be able to ask a question. So with that, David, Chaz, welcome to the program.
Adrian, thank you for having us. Looking forward to talking through freight audit and payment and talking a little bit about some of the implementation work and challenges and things that we've done. Yep. Happy to be here,
great.
Adrian.
So,
thanks.
Great. Well, thank you both for making the time. So, David, let me start with you, and kind of before we kind of dive into talking about, implementation, let's get an update on the state of the freight audit and payment market. I mean, is demand still strong? And if so, I mean, what are some of the factors that are driving it?
Yeah, so I mean, the freight audit and payment market is alive and it's definitely growing. From what we're seeing in the market today, beyond just the transactional audit and the competitive landscape in the industry, there's a lot of players that can certainly audit freight bills, that can pay carriers on time, that can allocate freight expenses. But what we're seeing now is that most of the audit engagements or RFP processes and demands for audit services are looking at taking the visibility to the audit and trying to expand that. And, whether it's integrating disparate transportation systems, such as, when you have a manifesting system for parcel and tying that to your TMS, or even looking at, global organizations who don't have complete visibility to all of their freight spend. And so a lot of what we're seeing is demand for audit services that incorporate all modes of spend, and even tying into some of the omni-channel distribution and what's taking place from a direct-to-consumer. Getting their hands on that data and being able to tie it all together is something that, we're seeing and we're frequently being asked to, from an audit setup, incorporate all of the different channels, certainly all of the modes, and it's definitely an area that's growing. And from a services perspective, being able to handle that in one system and providing that visibility is something that we're definitely seeing.
Yeah, I think, it gets to that fundamental question that I think it sounds simple, right? How much am I spending on transportation, right? What was our spend last year, as an example? Which seems like a simple question that you should be able to answer relatively quickly. But then when you peel back that onion, you realize that it's not that easy. When you, like you said, if you're dealing with multiple modes of transportation, if that data resides in multiple TMS systems, so on and so forth. So I would imagine that, part of the challenge still remains is in gathering all of that data, and to your point, being able to present that in a single view, right?
Right. To add to that a little bit, I mean, the other thing that we're seeing as far as an expansion or demand for services is having the tools to be able to present that data in an actionable way. And so beyond, being able to do the audit, having the tools and certainly the support team in place as part of that audit setup, is something that is important to large shipping organizations as well as the smaller ones, because they don't have all of the time in the day to spend not only auditing but but certainly having that data in one place. And so, you know, the tools are something that, as part of that demand, are really a requirement to even play in the game.
Great, great. So, you know, again, it sounds like freight auto payment is indeed still alive and kicking, going back to kind of the previous episode that we did. So Chaz, you know, kind of moving on now, you know, talking a little bit about the implementation. So, you know, presumably as a shipper or a manufacturer, retailer, you know, you've gone through this whole process of looking at what your needs are and looking at the different providers, and you finally kind of made the decision. And now it's the day after, right? And now it's time to actually kick this off and get the process implemented. I mean, where do you start? How do you kick off the implementation?
Yeah. I mean, for me, Adrian, first step is to kind of go find that sales rep and figure out the heck we've committed to at this point. Now, so in all seriousness, I mean, the implementation efforts starts as soon as we've made contact with a potential prospect. I mean, we're working to gather requirements and understand scope of the project before we've got ink on paper and before we're involving the broader project team and operations support. So, I mean, day one, hopefully, you know, best case scenario, we have already a great understanding for what it is we're looking at, the desired timeline of the client and general scope of the project as a whole. So in the event we don't, which also happens, you know, it's a quick sales process and they're ready to kick off immediately, we just jump in with the project plan and the pursuit of those requirements and the scope of the project is what we're after, you know, from the get-go. And it's not until we have a nailed down timeline, an understanding, and mutual agreements on every single piece of the scope to where we nail down kind of a post-requirements project plan, and then that's what we're using to drive the rest of the project. So to recap, I mean, we start by understanding what was sold and understanding our client's expectations. In the event we don't have that, we're going to lay out a kind of default style project plan, which helps us understand those requirements. And then 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, however long it takes for us to nail down what's involved, that's how long it takes. And we get buy-in from, I mean, it's important to get buy-in from all the stakeholders. And then from that date, that's when you roll out the project plan that both sides are going to be held accountable to.
Yeah, I mean, I think your comments, you know, underscore, I think, an important point here is that you really do have to, you know, plan appropriately to have a successful implementation. I think if you rush into it, if you really don't have an understanding of, to your point, what the objectives are, and then understanding, you know, having at least a starting point of a framework of a process that you're going to go through to, you know, making sure that you've got, you know, appropriate milestones set up and things like that. You know, I think the like a lot of things, the time and effort that you invest up front in planning it out are going to pay dividends, you know, in the back end. Now, you kind of joked a little bit about, you know, finding the salesperson to say, okay, what did we sell here? And, you know, and then you kind of basically said, hey, you know, ideally, in the ideal sense, right, the implementation team or the others that are going to be involved would have been part of the conversation all along, right?
Right.
But who else is involved? You know, who ideally should be involved in this implementation process, you know, once you're ready to go?
Yeah. So, I mean, the key stakeholders have honestly slowly but surely evolved. You know, a couple of years ago, who should be involved was an easy answer. It's transportation managers, directors of transportation, right? We got to hook up with the carriers. We got to get the bills and we got to get them audited. But these days, the key stakeholders and I would say major players in an implementation now also include finance. So I find that I'm working a lot more closely with finance managers and finance directors these days than I am necessarily folks from transportation space. So regardless of really who's involved, I mean, the scope and needs of the client are what's driving who's involved on their end. I mean, if there's geocoding and
complicated allocation type reporting requirements, then there better be somebody from finance in there, because I doubt the, the folks from transportation are going to be able to help us nail it down. So the scope's going to drive who's involved. I'd say, again, by default, it's somebody from transportation that's going to help us get these carriers on board, somebody from finance that's going to lay out what they need at the end of each week, and at the end of each month. How are we going to do the accrual? How are we going to do the general ledger coding? What type of, update is required into, AP systems on the client side? And then ideally, we'd get a dedicated project manager. So, in my experience, things are going to move a lot smoother when there's just someone on the client side that's going to help drive our, our plan and hold the folks on their end accountable. Because at the end of the day, and I know we're going to talk through kind of common challenges here eventually, but there's only so much we can do from a project side. If we're not getting collaboration from the folks on the other end and that they don't have all the key players involved, project's not going to be a success. So I'd say again, it's IT, it's a PM, and depending on the scope, it's usually finance and transportation.
Yeah, you mentioned there in your final comment there, IT, which was I was going to ask. I mean, we mentioned earlier in terms of part of the challenge is, bringing all that data, together. I mean, do you see, is someone from IT along with transportation, finance, and perhaps a dedicated product manager? I mean, is IT representation a critical, component of the team as well?
Yeah, if they're expecting integration back to client-side systems, there better be some IT involvement there. But in most cases, kind of best-of-breed type solutions where, we're implementing the full-blown freight audit and pay, accrual, GL coding, and an integrated AP detail back into their ERP, IT's involved. So I'd say seven to eight out of the last 10, major implementation projects that I've done personally, there's a pretty heavy IT component.
Yeah, not surprising. So David, let's go back to you now. And as Chaz mentioned, there's always challenges, that are involved with any implementation. And you can be great at planning, but there's always going to be roadblocks or hurdles that have to get overcome. I mean, in your experience, what are some of the more common challenges and that the companies face in a freight audit and payment implementation, and how do companies overcome them?
Sure. So, there is no shortage of challenges really in any implementation. I don't think freight audit and payment projects are much different than a supply chain systems implementation. To Chaz's point around the involvement on the client side, depending on the scope of the implementation, a lot of the challenge is dictated by, what level of involvement do you have from the client? And, whether it's participating on, weekly calls or getting information from the appropriate parties, if you don't have that sponsor on the client side, it's certainly something that will dictate how long the timeline for implementation is and will ultimately determine whether or not the implementation is a success and the operation is really seamless. Ways that we get around that are, from a project management perspective, we try to highlight, at which points during the implementation do the particular resources need to be engaged. We talked about the front end of the project documenting all of the requirements, and we'll have in those project plans specific tasks where, hey, we really need the transportation finance guys, or we really need the IT team to determine, what level of integration we're going to be working with and what is the capability on their side. Certainly, you might have constraints related to their development timeline, and you got to take that into account. And so, one of the biggest challenges is getting the sponsorship from the client. We get around that by introducing project management tools and specifically outlining, when and where we need to have the appropriate folks available, and that seems to help. One of the other challenges that we do find is most cases, freight audit and pay is not something you're implementing every year. And, shippers don't know what they don't know. And as we're going through the process to onboard and implement, and we're trying to get a hold of all their carriers, and we're trying to get all of the requirements for integration and GL coding, there's always some gap in what, the data we're able to get from the shipper is. And as we're going through the implementation process and start to do some testing, you know, one of the challenges is that there are those gaps. And, you know, again, we have tools in place to try to identify those up front, but there's always going to be, you know, a gap between what we're expected to get and kind of what we actually do. And so we try to work with clients on that. And it's really kind of a good thing for the shipper in that they're able to see, hey, this is something that we can do differently. And hopefully from the Invista side, we're able to say, you know, these are things we can help you with and ultimately will not be a problem in the future. And so, I mean, of the challenges that we have, I mean, getting the involvement from the client is probably the biggest. Certainly as we go through the project and start to get data, the gaps in what we're getting and some of the processes that those data elements enable are things that, you know, we often find are challenges, which, you know, we have ways to work around. But those are probably the two most common. To add to that, as you're starting to integrate with some external parties like carriers or like 3PLs, there's always going to be some challenge related to that integration, whether it's getting in the carrier's queue for integration, whether it's the data that's received from the shipper in the manifest files and tying that back to the invoice data. You know, those are things that, you know, again, you have to have the support in place to work through, and as you're going through the project, hopefully have a good understanding of where those challenges might be. But there's always going to be, you know, those questions, and certainly that's something that a good project team will try to uncover in advance and reduce the potential for those types of gaps. But, you know, in most implementations, there's always some of that.
No, certainly a lot of, you know, good points there. You know, Chaz, I don't know if you've got anything to add to what David just said. I mean, certainly he went through a good list there, but anything to add to that or emphasize?
Well, I mean, I think he hit it on the head as far as common problems. I think just back to some of the previous comments on how to avoid those, I mean, everything brings me back to scope and expectations and whether or not the client understands what we're here to do. And again, some of that falls on sales, but, you know, as an implementation group, I mean, we got to do our due diligence as well before this project even kicks off to really make sure that the client understands what's being implemented. And those challenges arise more often when there is scope creep or 5 weeks into the project, they're introducing some new requirement that nobody's bothered to even ask or engage them on. So I think in addition to those, it's the scope type things that catch you off guard when you're halfway through a project that can derail the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think if you know, regardless of what type of implementation you're talking about, I think that the root cause of a lot of these challenges, and I think you kind of alluded to it, is really, you know, poor communication, you know, between all those involved, right? I think if you have ongoing, clear, honest communication with everyone involved, you kind of minimize the risk for scope creep, for, you know, some of these surprises, if you will, that because someone forgot to ask, or someone didn't you know, feel compelled to you know, put on the table, if you will. You know, Chaz, let me you know, stay with you here for a second. You know, so as you're going along the implementation, I mean, how do you measure, you know, the progress and success of the implementation?
Yeah, it's a huge piece of making the project a success. And for me and for us, our strategy is pretty simple. I mean, we're going to provide constant and consistent client touches as far as whether it's a dedicated meeting with every single key stakeholder or, you know, and every other day one-on-one with their dedicated PM. I mean, we are going to be all over it and completely transparent throughout every step of the project plan. And unless you do that, I mean, in my experience, you're opening the door for there to be problems when, you know, you haven't touched base in 2 weeks and the client doesn't necessarily understand what progress has been made or what challenges you overcome. And I mean, that's probably project management 101, but at the same time, I mean, you'd be surprised at how many clients we work with that say, here are our requirements, here's the carrier details, here's my go-to contacts, let me know when we're up and running. And that doesn't really work well. So it's when we have that constant involvement, both sides are engaged because they have to be, And then it's just holding, it's a matter of holding each other accountable to, as David alluded to earlier, the resources that have been allocated to the specific steps in the project plan, so that when everybody gets on the same call together, it's, you know, did you provide what you said you were going to provide? And, you know, are we as far along as we should be? So transparency, holding key players accountable for key aspects of the project plan. And then, I mean, again, for me, it's at least, you know, weekly touch bases with key stakeholders throughout the entire project. So, I mean, there's really no other way to make it a success unless both sides are invested in the outcome.
Yeah, that last point I think is key. You know, I think a lot of, maybe not a lot, but certainly some, you know, companies, you know, once they decide to work with a third party or work, you know, whether in any kind of relationship, you know, those that get in trouble are those that say, hey, you know, we have no responsibility or no accountability here. You know, they kind of toss everything onto the shoulders of the third party, where in reality, you know, you're working together as partners in, you know, achieving those desired outcomes. So, you know, staying invested, and providing the adequate resources and time, on the client side, you know, it's critically important is what I heard you say there. David, anything to add to that?
You know, from our perspective, another thing would be that in the implementation plans, you know, having a methodology around how you're approaching that project and building milestones into those plans is something that when you're going through the process, you should have those certain milestones that until we're all in agreement that we understand the requirements and we get the client sign off, we're not going to move forward with any development or customization. And then from there, when we get into the development cycle, until we've gone through that testing and getting the acceptance from the client that what we've documented as requirements and what we're developing out as a custom or a solution for that particular client is approved, we're probably not going to roll out to the carriers and say, hey, we're ready to go live. And then from that point, getting, you know, the carriers in the mix and making sure that, you know, they're obviously providing what they're supposed to as part of the onboarding effort. And so, you know, we try to establish different milestones throughout the implementation projects, and certainly they're, depending on the scope, are different types of milestones within those phases of the implementation. But from our end, you know, that allows us to not only track progress, but to highlight, you know, potential areas of risk that maybe, you know, later on in the implementation process might be an area of concern. And so in addition to, you know, getting the buy-in from the client, it's having those milestones in place that everyone's aware of. As Chaz alluded to, we're going to have a weekly project meeting and make sure, you know, everybody knows what's on the table and who needs to be involved. But you have that plan in front of you and that methodology to fall back on as a tool to help deliver on, you know, whatever the scope of that implementation is.
Great, great. Now I know, you know, the answer to this next question is you know, really depends on, the, you know, the scope of the project and a lot of other factors. But can you comment a little bit, David, on, I don't know if typical is the right word, but, you know, how long, you know, usually takes to, you know, on our range, depending, you know, for a relatively simple implementation, it'll take this long, you know, something that might be more global, complex, you know, it might take this long, just to get a sense of, you know, if everything works smoothly, this is kind of the range of how long to be up and running, if you will.
Sure. Parcel only onboarding effort, those types of engagements can literally take a week to 2 weeks. That said, most of the engagements are going to include freight across all modes and parcel, and there's going to be different levels of integration with clients and certainly carriers that a long list of carriers that might need to be onboarded. And so we typically break our pre-implementation project plans into 8, 12, and 16-week templates. And then depending on the requirements that are uncovered in the beginning of that implementation, the implementation timeline can be anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, depending on how complex GL coding, number of carriers you're going to be onboarding, reporting requirements, and then 16 weeks, you know, for the bigger global implementation that might have multiple project teams in each region where you have a, you know, project or program management across all of those teams. With requirements that are certainly unique to the regions in which you're implementing. It is, like you said, dependent on the scope, and every implementation is slightly different. A lot of that's driven by how big the freight spend is, really. But that said, you could have 100 million in freight spend and only a handful of carriers, and it's primarily parcel. And so that'll be a lot quicker. But in most cases, you know, it's 8, 12, 16-week project template. And then from there, once we get the client's requirements, we'll either trim it down to, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, or expand it to the 12 or 16-week timeline.
Great. And I think that's very helpful. You know, I've got a couple of more questions here, but we do have a question from one of our viewers here, so I'm going to get to that. And I just want to remind the rest of you that if you do have a question on this topic, you know, and you want to submit it, you know, now would be the time to do so. So we've got a question here from Joe. I'm going to put it up on the screen and read it. So Joe asks, if in any of your recent implementations, have you seen any trends of clients making a concerted effort to extend payment terms, 60, 90, 120 days rather than 30?
Are those payment terms for our services or payment terms with the carriers? I guess
I would assume it's, well, hopefully not for you guys, but I would assume that's with the carriers.
You know, from my experience, no, I haven't seen shippers trying to extend their terms as part of an audit and payment implementation. Certainly from a sourcing perspective, the payment terms that are being negotiated as part of, you know, onboarding new service providers or even changing the terms with a current provider is certainly part of that conversation. But in the actual audit and payment implementation process, you know, we don't typically see the carrier terms being renegotiated or changed. And to add some context to the terms in the audit and payment implementation, you know, most systems can provide the aging process within the application. And so that's certainly something that we take into account, whether it's, you know, based on net terms and the client does the aging, or it's something that, you know, the system as part of the audit process performs the aging within the application.
Great. Great. Joe, thank you for the question. You know, before, you know, so David, I'll have one more question for you, and then we'll have you and Chaz kind of wrap up here. You know, so now you've kind of implemented the process already. I mean, how do you ensure ongoing success, right? So it's one thing to kind of, you know, you hit it out of the park, you know, going live and in those early days, but you know, the real test is, you know, how do you maintain, you know, a certain level of excellence, you know, moving forward? You know, any you know, advice, recommendations, insights related to that?
Yeah, I think similar to the handoff from sales to the implementation team. There is as critical of a handoff from the implementation team to the operations side of the account. And so what, you know, should take place is that the integration of the auditors on the account and the client services sponsors who are responsible for the day-to-day reporting should start to take place, you know, when you get into the testing and training phases of the project, and certainly should take place when you're starting to go through documenting SOPs and any of the client-specific requirements. After the integration takes place, you know, PMs and guys who've been on the implementation will still be involved on some level until the account is stable. But, you know, for the most part, you know, once you go live, that's when we really hand it over to the operations side of the house. From a just making sure that it's still operating smoothly, the other important factor to consider is that as part of the implementation, you should be coming up with certain service level requirements or metrics that the operations team should be held accountable for, as well as the carriers, as well as the customer side. And so that could be things like, hey, you know, from a receipt of invoice, whether it's EDI or it's paper, we need to have that invoice closed within 1 to 2 business days. And so from the operations side, you should be reporting based on your cycle time, how long it takes to process an invoice. Or as part of the onboarding effort, we need to have 95% of the carriers on electronic billing. You know, we should be reporting back, you know, what percentage of the invoices per week or per month are received electronically. And then certainly getting into the payables processes, there's a number of different metrics that can be implemented. You know, obviously paying bills on time is a pretty big part of the audit and payment process. So, you know, the close, the payment, and then from the client side, if it is a bill pay where we're paying for the client, how long it takes for them to fund a request that we've made, and then on our side, how long the funding actually takes place. And so I think the you know, the overall kind of statement here is that as part of the implementation, you should be defining the key metrics for the handoff to the operation. And then from there, The weekly process or monthly process should incorporate those metrics as part of the visibility that the client has.
Yeah, you touched on metrics, which was, you kind of answered it before I even asked, because I think that's a key thing there, right? In terms of, you know, really having, you know, those measures defined and in place, because that's really what's going to help really keep the process, you know, within, you know, pointed towards your desired outcomes, right? And being able to, from a continuous improvement standpoint, you know, being able to see when deviations start, you know, when you start moving away from, you know, those established, you know, objectives around those metrics. We're kind of running short on time here, so I'll just go to, like, to my last question. Chaz, maybe I'll, since you have been, we'll kind of work it back to you. Maybe you can kick off this final question here. I mean, you know, if you had to boil everything down that we just kind of talked about here today, you know, into a single, you know, nugget of advice or recommendation, you know, to ensure a successful freight on-demand payment implementation, I mean, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, put me on the spot here. So for me, it's pretty simple, and I've been kind of driving this point home our entire conversation. But I mean, it's setting clear and obtainable expectations from the start, putting those on paper, and holding both sides accountable throughout the entire project. And then once the project goes live, and I was going to add this to, you know, David's answer on the previous question, it's that relationship then doesn't go away, right? So now that we are live and we've worked together for 12 weeks and we've established a relationship, we're going to meet quarterly or, you know, monthly at a minimum to keep this intact and continue to drive against whatever the KPIs are that have been established. So, I mean, to boil it down, for me, it's the obtainable and agreed upon expectations. It's the ability to hold both parties accountable. And then it's to establish that partnership post-go-live to where, you know, you are, and maybe I just love meetings, but meeting with the client on a regular basis to, you know, review what is important to the client so that, you know, you're getting feedback on your performance as well.
Great insights and advice there. David, what would you add to that?
I mean, I think Chad's hit on most of the points, but the big thing is setting an expectation and making sure that, you know, you deliver on whatever those expectations are. And when there are, you know, things that are introduced in the project, whether it's scope creep or there's issues on whatever side, that it's highlighted and that you have candid conversations with the vendor who's implementing and with the client side. And as long as, you know, everyone's transparent and the expectations are set and they're realistic, you're going to have a successful implementation, and you have those kind of candid conversations. It really is not a very complex thing to implement freight audit and payment. That said, there are complexities and challenges throughout them. And so, you know, if you put in the right steps, you have the methodology and the plans in place, it's something that, you know, is a very attainable set up. And so from our end, I would agree with everything that Chaz said.
Great. And with that, David and Chaz, I mean, like I always say at the end of all our episodes, you know, we always just manage to scratch the surface on these topics. But certainly, I think you both provided some great insight and advice on, you know, some key learnings around successfully implementing a freight on a payment program. So again, thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us today.
Thank you, Adrian. We appreciate the opportunity.
Yep. Thanks.
And I want to thank all of you who joined us live today. And you know, and Joe, thank you for your question. If you are watching this episode on demand and you've got a question for David or Chaz, and you can go ahead and find this episode again on talkinglogistics.com. You can post your question or comment there, and I'm sure David and Chaz will be more than happy to respond via that medium. So again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.